Are you a prominent political figure? Maybe you're an activist trying to affect change in the world. Or perhaps you're the figurehead of an ideology that's rubbing people the wrong way. If any of these describe you, I've got some bad news. You might be the target of an assassination. Assassins with me, Aslan Pahari, brings you the stories of the assassinations that changed the course of history. Find it on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome back to History or Hoarding. I'm Annabelle Crabb. Okay, it's time now to talk about an uncomfortable subject. And that subject is disaster. What happens when disaster strikes? Because if you are an institutional hoarder and you collect millions of unusual things, and you're really good at looking after them. I mean, let me tell you, this library has 25 different gauges of tissue paper. They make special boxes to contain very, very delicate things. But there's always going to be something that goes horrifically wrong. And in an institution where you don't ever, ever forget anything, the memory of what it feels like when things go horribly wrong is comparably immortal. I understand that I need to know about something called the Big Neg.
Well, things do happen in libraries that, you know, we perhaps wish hadn't. Mm. And I remember when I first started work at the library and began working with the original materials collections, and I heard about the Holtman collection, which is internationally significant, a very large collection of glass plate negatives.
Wet plate glass negatives. Now, I will go on to explain in really quite exhausting detail what exactly a wet plate glass negative is. But for now, just run your mind through what could possibly go wrong with a 1 metre by 1.5 metre sheet of glass, and you'll begin to imagine the situation that the library found itself in.
And I would hear the story of, oh yes, but then there's the one that got broken.
Shattered.
Slid down the wall and smashed.
200 pieces of broken glass.
Tiny little shards and glass dust.
Just lying,
oh God,
on the floor.
I would die.
And yet, somehow, this dreadful event that is any librarian's worst nightmare also shows that even the remnants of a disaster have value if you hold on to them long enough. Now, we will get to the horrifying specifics of the disaster in question, but first let's go back to understand what it was that actually broke. It all started with a man named Bernhard Holtman. He found the biggest reef gold specimen that had ever been found in Australia. It was 286 kilos.
Once the nugget was found, he commissioned the photographer to actually take a photograph of him with the nugget before it was crushed. So it was his height.
And our friend and curator, Margot Riley, who told us this story, she tactfully points out that Holtman, well, he was pretty stoked to be standing next to a very big thing.
He wasn't a particularly tall man.
I see.
So I think size had a lot to do with it. He was impressed with size.
He was a small guy with big dreams, I think we can say. Holtman came to Australia in 1858. His principal goal at the time was to avoid Prussian military service.
He was an immigrant himself coming to the goldfields. And because he'd struck it rich and made good, he decided that he wanted to document basically the success that he had had photographically and then take that message to the world so everyone could see Australia was a great place. Land of opportunity.
Holtman wanted to infect people on the other side of the world with his enthusiasm for an Antipodean land they had no idea how to visualise. So, his plan was to capture images of the gold rush, of the mining towns of New South Wales, and of Sydney, which was just starting to spread its wings over the harbour. And it was in the depiction of Sydney that Bernhard Holtermann decided to go big. Like, really big.
Because again, I think size was a thing.
Holtermann, collaborating with a series of photographers, set out to create the biggest photograph that ever existed.
That was his idea. How big can we go?
Now, size wasn't just a vanity project when it came to these photographs. Back then, size was a very specific technological challenge.
At that time, you couldn't enlarge an image. So if you wanted a big picture, you needed a big negative.
Right. So with all of the money from his gold mining, he built a mansion called the Towers in St. Leonard's in North Sydney. And it had it had a big stained glass window, which had an image of him with the nugget. It had a spiral staircase and it had panoramic views of Sydney, which also became his giant lens for his giant glass wet plate negatives.
To in order to take the photograph, he then had to build a space where he could actually make the room operate like a camera.
It was a fabulously complicated and time-urgent process. He started with a big sheet of glass.
He found the plate glass, which was from a shop window glass. It's the size we're talking about. Yeah.
And he paid guys to carry these huge sheets of glass up to his tower.
And it had a spiral staircase. So you can imagine with those massive sheets of glass, having to get those sheets of glass up to the top as well.
And then once they got the glass upstairs, they coated that plate of glass with a film of something called collodion. Now, collodion is a sticky, gooey solution made of gun cotton, alcohol, and ether, which does sound kind of like an early colonial roofie. It's very, very sticky. What is gun cotton, by the way? I'm glad you asked. It's gunpowder, pretty much. This collodion gunk, I should say, was also at the time in use by surgeons who smeared it over surgical wounds to seal them. Yeah, the 19th century was not a great time to have an operation. But yeah, the whole glass plate had to be coated with this collodion.
And then they had to sort of tilt it to... It took a few men to do this. Their fingerprints are actually still in the emulsion.
So you train the light through a lens.
It had this massive telephoto lens.
Onto this light-sensitive, sticky sheet.
And the windows in the tower formed the aperture of the camera.
And there were multiple windows, so they took multiple photographs. And the big ones, at the time, they were the largest wet plate glass negatives in the world.
Yeah, so it was a huge achievement, a feat, an absolute feat of technology.
They were so detailed. I mean, you could read street signs. What else have we got to look at? Because I know we've got other trees. Oh, yeah, great.
Oh, the originals.
Yes, please.
So these are the ones that haven't broken. So it has quite extraordinary resolution, the collodion. It has no grain. So when it's digitised, you can zoom right into it really, really to an extraordinary degree.
That's amazing.
And you can see also the movement of the ships on the harbour. So there is the blurring where obviously the waves are coming and the ships are moving. But then that contrasts so extraordinarily with the precision of the and the sharpness of this, you know, the solid objects.
I love that you can see the individual bricks of a house.
If you look at the panoramic image as assembled, first of all, you realise that Holtermann really had a terrific view. But you're also looking at a slice of Sydney's history that was brief. You're looking at the harbour from North Sydney before there's a bridge and before there's an opera house.
The harbour itself is, you know, internationally recognisable. It's a jewel in the crown of Sydney. And here it is captured at that time before any of those things were there.
You said in one of our conversations before we were recording, it's like one of the areas of Sydney that it would have changed the most. Like you couldn't have picked a photo that would have changed more.
I think that's really true. Of all of the, you know, you get the sense of what Sydney looked like before the suburbs are built. And so you can see that all of the areas beyond the CBD are still, you know, many of them are just hills. There's nothing built on it. So thankfully he did record those areas before they were there.
It's like baby duckling photograph of Sydney. Those plates together complete a panoramic view of Sydney, which is not matched by any other image anywhere in the world. Now, Bernhard Hultermann enjoyed the glow of this success for around 10 years before dying in 1885 of multiple ailments, including dropsy. Essentially, it's swelling and fluid retention. Of his pioneering negatives, nothing was heard for around 60 years, until somebody wondered where they were.
The library had a print of one of the panoramas that had been shot by the photographer who worked for Hultermann, Charles Bayliss. And these photographic historians came in and said to the librarian, you know, where did this come
from? Amazing stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And she said, oh, I think if you contact the family in Chatswood, you know, maybe they've got something else. So they went, knocked on the door, get taken to the garden shed in Chatswood, and here are these 4,500 amazing negatives, all still stored in their beautiful wooden boxes.
You know, in the family, there's always someone who's like, you've got a shed, Muriel, you take them. I don't want them, but Dad would be horrified if we threw these out. Come on, there's nothing in that shed. You're not using it for anything. I mean, they weren't all huge. Some of them were teeny tiny. But there were three of the four giant wet plate glass negatives of the Sydney Harbour. Nobody knows what happened to the fourth one. And I'm just guessing here, but I have a hunch that whoever's shed that was perfectly happy to surrender those negatives to the State Library. So those negatives, biggest in the world, sat in the library for another few decades. And now comes the uncomfortable part of the story.
They were wrapped in brown paper.
Yeah.
And they were standing in the stack.
They weren't even doing a safe lean, I think. They were near vertical.
Because they're landscape. Mm. But it was actually standing portrait.
Oh,
which is
okay.
So the wrong way to do it, because it's, you know, it's top heavy. The other thing you have to remember too is we're over the railway line, the, you know, the city circle line.
Oh,
so the rumbling
yeah.
over time.
And so, unbeknownst to the librarians, the big neg was just slowly, quietly slipping until one day in 1982, boom!
One of them fell.
Now, CSI wet plate glass negative is a little short on details in terms of investigation. We don't know who the person was who thought, those will be all right. And we don't even know who the person was who discovered walking in one day that one of them had fallen over and shattered into smithereens. But we do know, and this precise detail makes me picture the weeping librarian who did the count, that it was in 291 pieces.
And can you imagine being the person who came in the next day and saw this?
These confused, heartbroken librarians who looked at the smashed remains of this big negative. They counted the pieces and they put them in a box because they did not know what else to do.
In the way of librarians who preserve everything, they picked up all of the pieces. So some of the broken pieces were really quite large, but you went right down to glass dust. And all of that was swept up and boxed and put on a shelf and kept.
Hoping against hope that one day a miracle would happen and they might be able to, you know, reconstruct.
So after the incident in 1982, those bits sat in a box for ages. Because, you know, when something like that happens, you don't even want to open the lid and confirm that it is exactly as bad as you thought. But as the years rolled by, staff retired and new people came in and they started to look differently at these shards of glass.
It was just one of those niggly things from years ago when someone had shown me the box of bits, thinking, surely we can do something.
Louise Animat comes back into this story. We know her as the lady who told us about the hair collection at the library. She's the Dixon librarian. Back then was the director of collection care.
and I was watching a conservator reconstruct a half plate glass negative, which had been broken. So one that's about an A3 size of paper size. And I thought, if you can do that with a small one, surely we can do that with the giant one.
So a quick word here about some of the very important people that work in libraries and museums and art galleries. They're called conservators. They look after delicate things and they try to make sure they don't deteriorate. Now, fixing something that's broken in-house, something as dramatically shattered as the Big Neg, it's the kind of job that somebody starts talking about and you urgently develop business elsewhere.
It was quite tricky because the levels, the glass had broken crossways and lengthways, so you had height differentials as well, which they had to allow for. And then, of course, the most damaged part of the giant neg was literally tiny little shards and glass dust.
But still, Louise thought it was worth a try.
And so I put it to the conservators, who emphatically said, no, we can't do that. That's impossible.
On the other side of the library, you've got Margot, who is keen as mustard to enter these amazing, unique wet plate glass negatives in the UNESCO Memory of the World project. There's actually a really beautiful explanation from UNESCO about why they started the Memory of the World project. They said that they were trying to guard against collective amnesia.
And there are very few pieces of Australian documentary heritage that are truly considered to be internationally significant. Mm. And one of them was the Big Neg, or the idea of the Big Negs.
In order to be listed, the item needs to be unique, irreplaceable. Something whose disappearance or deterioration would constitute a harmful impoverishment of the heritage of humanity.
Deep breath. It's okay.
Yes, we've got most of it. So Margot's pretty discouraged by all this and wasn't even sure if she could enter them. But she kind of talks herself through it and decides, you know what, I'm going to get the remains of that Big Neg and just do some research. So she goes to the online catalogue to request that the box of broken bits be recovered from its shame shelf deep in the collection. And she finds that someone from Louise's collection care team had already checked it out.
I walked into our meeting room one day and there was a corkboard with pieces of what I recognised were the giant neg, so photocopies, scanned copies of the big pieces, pinned up on the corkboard, exactly like a jigsaw puzzle.
And that's when you know you've got your jigsaw puzzler hooked, right?
Because we have conservators who just love a puzzle. They basically pieced it back together.
So we had an intact photographic image of the negative before it broke. So just like the lid of the jigsaw puzzle box, that was our lid.
They made a copy of all the broken pieces, and you would go past a big notice board in the collection care lab and they would be slowly but surely, oh, I think that bit goes there.
Literally like a collective,
a big
workplace
jigsaw puzzle. Exactly.
So we physically reconstructed it as a paper document, a paper thing, and then physically put them together.
They pieced it back together.
They did, reconstruct it.
So is it actually all stuck back together now?
They didn't stick it
right
because
okay,
it was considered that was not going to be the best thing for the neg.
Because I've got a hot glue gun at my house.
I know that's tempting. It's very tempting. But I don't know that it would actually be good.
No, I suspect that my enthusiasm should yield to your expertise on this point. The thing that fascinates me about this story is that the existence of these giant negatives themselves were the product of an obsessive interest by an individual, a wealthy individual. I kind of love that it got put back together thanks to the obsessive interest of librarians.
Librarians and conservators, archivists, they do have obsessive tendencies, which tends to be what makes us annoying but also good at our jobs.
And the other thing is that technology played a really important role in the reassembly of the Big Neg.
They actually used AI with UTS, University of Technology, to do some digital mapping to actually digitise the whole thing and put it back together.
So we have images of it showing all the pieces, but an image of it melded back together digitally as well.
And the library used the reconstituted image of this negative as part of its submission to the Memory of the World Register. And in 2013, the Holtermann collection was officially added to UNESCO's Memory of the World.
We came up trumps. It is the biggest negatives in the world.
Oh, my heart soars.
We did it.
We did it.
Go Holtermann.
We did it. So good. These days, the shattered remains of the Big Neg are protected to a far higher degree than the original giant sheet of glass enjoyed, because every broken shard is preserved in its brokenness in such a beautiful and careful way, such that each shattered piece is held in position and can't wobble or smash up against another broken piece. Okay, so let's have a look at the shattered remains, because I noticed that, obviously you pieced it together and photographed it, reassembled, but in this box it has been stored in its shards,
yes.
Right? So this would have to be the most complicated storage box in the library, right? Because all of its little foam core cutouts are absolutely rigidly and immovably supporting the shattered shards of Neg so they don't move around. It's like an artwork in itself. Like if I shook this box, it wouldn't move even though it's full of broken glass.
And so then the position of the shards that are in this box, they've each been numbered, and that is shown in a placement image, so that if you pick up this box and look at all the, spread out samples, you'll be able to see straight away, how they fit into the jigsaw puzzle.
The library's really ploughed on, knowing that it will never be perfect again, but seeing a value in reassembling this thing whilst absolutely admitting that it got smashed. But I'll give the library this. They don't cover it up. They're very, very happy to chat about it. And it made me think that disaster sometimes, while intensely painful when it happens, can be a way of improving the way you do things.
Well, we have exhibited. We did exhibit it, and we used the digital image, and we did use the shards so that people could see things do get broken. It's not something that you would want to happen in a cultural institution where, that's your duty of care. And it was a tragedy when it happened. But thankfully, with technology, we have actually been able in some ways to, reinstate the significance of the item by doing this work. And I think that's really important that people understand, cultural institutions, things aren't always perfect. Yeah. Things do go wrong.
Things go missing, things get nicked, broken.
But you have to give credit to the librarians and the conservators of the day. They kept every single little bit until there was a solution.
And it's a variation on everything that the library does. They're forever piecing together stories that have blown apart and need to be reassembled with a careful hand. But in this case, they're literally reassembling a precious, huge glass thing that fell over and smashed.
A lesser human would have just popped it all in the bin and then gone for a very long walk.
Well, I don't think we put it in the bin. But
no,
still,
Of course not. Who'd do that? I can't imagine.
No.
Next time, a different kind of disaster story, one that's on the horizon for all of us, the slow, ticking time bomb of our digital lives.
We're going to have this point where the physical stuff has run out and the world went digital. If we don't capture that, then that's kind of a digital dark age.
History or Hoarding is made on the lands of the Gadigal people. It's written and presented by me, Annabelle Crabb, with research by Julia O'Shea. Harvey O'Sullivan is our audio engineer. Rachel Cusick is our supervising producer. And Carmel Rooney is our executive producer.